I'm sorry I'm rushed today, but if you call me, I would be glad to tell you everything I know about book publicity, which
okay.
which is
did you worth did you write
something.
Your
yeah numbers on that.
Great. Well, I'll tell you. Last time we chatted, this was the book, the title of which escapes me, but it was the one about giving birth,
Confessions of a Pregnant
That's
Father.
That's right. How could I forget that title? And you had a nanny. You had problems with the nanny. That was written in the book. Later, you and I talked, and you conveyed your concern about your relationship with the nanny and everything. So when the nanny came out, I knew you were going to be writing a book about this. So when it came out, I picked it up, and I said, well, this is going to be a funny book. Funny book, probably a nonfiction book about your experiences with this nanny. I think you brought her. I can't remember. Was she Irish?
From Australia, actually.
So almost. Same.
Yes.
So I said, this is really going to be a funny book. So I began reading it, and I said, you know, this isn't so funny. Well, tell me how you fooled everybody about this book.
It's a very scary book. The nanny is about a couple who are a two-career couple, like my wife and I. And they have a baby, as my wife and I did. And the baby has colic, as our baby did. And they hire a nanny, as we did. But unlike the couple in the book called The Nanny, we had a nanny who was, she did have a British accent, like the nanny in the book, but she was not an evil person. The nanny in the book, the nanny, is an evil person who, the first thing is that she's a very domineering British nanny, and she really takes over the household. And that really happens, because it's your first baby, and you don't know anything about babies, and in comes this experienced person, you pretty much defer to her. And so anyway, this couple defers to her. She takes over the household, and then she starts being very seductive of the father, and then seductive of the mother. And the father begins to get that she is an evil person, and he tries too late to check out her references, and finally reaches a guy who she used to work for who says, you've got to get rid of her at all costs. She is a threat to your life. And the father understandably gets very scared and flees with the wife and the child, and I won't tell you what happens next, but it gets very scary. How I happened to get into this was, of course, because I did have a similar situation to start with, that is a young baby with colic and a nanny and so on. But I also, although I am a humorist primarily, and I've done books like How to Be a Jewish Mother, How to Make Yourself Miserable, How to Avoid Love and Marriage, Confessions of a Pregnant Father was even a humorous book, as you said. I did write a scary book about 8 or 9 years ago called Love Kills. I don't know if you remember that. It was a story about a psychopathic killer, a serial killer, and a homicide cop and a psychic girl. And that did very well. It was a bestseller. And to research that, I hung out with the New York Police Department for about 4 months in very bad neighborhoods. And I was so intrigued by that whole life, the life of cops and how they talk and act and think and the underworld and scary stuff, that I was determined to write more scary books. And it took me a while to get to the next one because I really started researching the form. I started looking up Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, and Emily Bronte and Charlotte Bronte, and J.S. Lafano, who is an Irish ghost story writer that you may or may not be familiar with. And I tried first a sort of period piece, a horror story written in the 20s, maybe not written, but that takes place in the 20s. And that just didn't come off somehow, so I never published it. Then I had another couple false starts, and then along came this baby and our nanny, and suddenly the whole thing fell into place, and I said, that's the book I want to write. And it really clicked. And I think it works because, first of all, I've never seen a book about that subject before, and it's really rife with possibilities, because when you're a new parent and you hire a nanny, a stranger, to come into your home, you are tremendously vulnerable. At best, there's going to be an invasion of privacy. At best, you can no longer walk around nude or half-clothed or make love or fight without an awareness that there is a definite presence in your house, an alien presence in your house. At worst, we've all heard the terrible things that nasty people do to small children in daycare centers. So it is a situation that has built into it a lot of potential terror and being a novelist and being a nervous father, I put the two things together and came up with the plot for The Nanny.
Yes, there's a lot of terror in there, but one thing that surprised me, that was the supernatural element. Now, you've taken it a step further. That's probably going to surprise people.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Why did you decide to do that?
Because many years ago also, I did a book on the supernatural called Something's There, My Adventures in the Occult. And I'm very intrigued by that whole area. And Something's There was started out as a wise guy and ended up being somewhat respectful of what I found. Because there are certainly a lot of charlatans and a lot of silly stuff that goes on in the area of the occult, but there's a lot of very scary stuff that is irrefutable. And we don't have enough time to go on and explain that at length, but I really did see enough to make me very respectful of the area. And I just thought if the nanny was not only evil, but also had a supernatural element, you know, she's at least half human, but there's also a supernatural element to her, that it would be a very intriguing mix. There's also, you know, I haven't totally abandoned humor in The Nanny. There is a lot of humor in it because I am a humor writer. But I think that it's very nice to mix humor and horror. As a matter of fact, humor and horror are similar kinds of writing in a funny way because of the construction. In both, you're orchestrating the reader toward a very profound emotional response. In the case of humor, you're orchestrating him toward a laugh. And in the case of horror, you're orchestrating him toward a scream. And it's the same kind of timing that's involved, really. And, of course, what I do is I loosen the reader up with humor, and then I kind of zap him with a very scary plot twist.
Do you think your fans are going to be surprised by this darker side of the Dan Greenberg personality?
Not the ones who really know my work, because I have done a few scary books. As I said, Love Kills, Something's There, which is a little bit scary. And many years ago, I did a novel called Philly, which was, you know, it's probably six people read it in this country alone. And it was not one of your bigger hits.
Anybody in Philly read it?
No. I think it was all my friends in New York. But that was actually made into a movie that was not scary called Private Lessons, about a young boy and a seductive governess. So maybe it was a precursor to The Nanny.
The nannies, governesses, and so forth. Were you blessed with this?
I never was, and had a lot of active fantasies about it, and got a chance to sort of live them out in these books. But anyway, you know, I have wondered for a long time, why is it that people are so interested in reading scary books? The obvious answer is they're exciting and they're fun, but I think it is also that we all have a lot of problems, and no matter how bad our problems are at our work, in our family, in our marriage, in our financial situation, the problems of the people in a scary book like The Nanny are much worse. So ours seem tame by comparison, unless, of course, we have hired an evil nanny, in which case our problems are exactly the same as those of the people in The Nanny. But also, the problems of the people in a scary book are going to be resolved one way or another by the end of the book, unlike our own problems, which go on forever. So I think it's very comforting, really, to read a scary book like The Nanny and know that by the end of it, first of all, these people are in a lot worse shape than you are, and second, their problems are going to be all solved by the end of the book. That's sort of a nice
that's
promise.
True. At the same time, all around us, we see horrible, hideous acts of violence and mass murder.
Yeah.
This the apparent murder aboard this airplane and the commuter airplane in California.
Yeah.
People who take multiple lives of their families and people around them for no reason. And yet, we still like to read books like The Nanny and The Habit of Fear by Dorothy Salisbury Davis and so forth. These are thrillers that also have murders. But I think what happens
they're
is...
They're containable.
Yeah,
they're not threatening.
You
they're
can
control
these.
Exactly.
Things. You can put them in the covers of a book
and
put them aside, look at them when you want, and you're not helpless.
Yeah. And real life, the terrors of real life are really like staring into the abyss. There is no end to them. There's no bottom. And it's a great escape to read a scary book because you know that the author isn't going to let you down. You know that the author is going to bring you safely through to the end. Stephen King, who I think is brilliant and is really sort of the master of the genre, speaks very interestingly about horror writing and what the horror writer's relationship is with the reader. He says the horror writer takes the reader by the hand and says, enfolds it in his own and takes and says, come here, I want to show you something. It's in the next room. It's lying under a sheet. I want to show it to you. Come here. I want you to touch it here and here and here. And he says, the body under the sheet is you. I mean, it's a wonderful, grotesque image. But I'm a particular fan of Stephen King, and Stephen King has just given me an incredible quote for The Nanny. He said, The Nanny is horrifying and mesmerizing, a Rosemary's Baby for the 80s and 90s. I couldn't put it down, he said, and anyone who reads the first five pages won't be able to. So I'm eternally in the man's debt. I mean, I couldn't have written a better quote myself.
Oh, sure you could.
No, I couldn't have.
Well, he's absolutely right. I read The Nanny. I think I read all but maybe the last chapter or so in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just did not want to put it down because it does hold your interest and it keeps you going. In the process of writing, how does it happen with you? Did you block out The Nanny and line it out?
Yeah, you have to.
You know exactly where you're going from beginning.
It's very tightly written. I mean, the first draft was almost twice as long, and I wanted it to move extremely quickly. I really made it. I wrote it in such a way as to make sure that the reader had a great amount of trouble putting it down once he picked it up. And I have very short chapters, and they all pretty much end on cliffhangers. And it's very hard not to go on and say, "Well, I'll just read one more chapter because it'll only take 2 minutes." And it's very spare, and it's very, and I trimmed out all the fat, all the I actually trimmed out a lot of stuff that I liked, but I just wanted it to move very quickly and get the reader really caught up in it.
Well, is this the process that you worked with your editor on? You said the editor didn't care for the first draft, and
he encouraged me to really pare it down to real basics, and I think it's a much faster and scarier novel now.
Well, it is, and I think that your fans are going to like it, Dan. I think, although you do have a history of writing a couple of morbid-type stories, I think that they are indeed going to like The Nanny. I know I did, so I'm going to be able to recommend it. I'd like to be able to talk to you longer, but you said you have another appointment in a few minutes.
Yeah.
So I will discharge you.
Okay.
I think we've covered the book pretty well. I appreciate that you took the time to come in, and I hope we'll do this again.
Yeah, me too. It was fun.